Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
This is live coverage from ABC News. Here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has died. President Carter served just one term, but was most effective after leaving office, redefining his image post-presidency through tireless work alongside his wife and childhood sweetheart, Rosalynn. Together, through the Carter Foundation, they promoted health, human rights, and justice across the globe, all while maintaining a fierce commitment to faith, family, and Southern roots. ABC's David Muir with more now on the life of Jimmy Carter and those pivotal moments that shaped his legacy.
He was the boy from Georgia, from the small town of Plains to the presidency.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Growing up on a peanut farm in a home with no running water or electricity, he would forge his own path, an outsider determined to take on a corrupt Washington and to try to turn the page.
I say to you quite frankly that the time for racial discrimination is over.
His path to the presidency began in Plains, valedictorian of his high school, graduate of the Naval Academy, and after running the family business, he would turn to politics. In 1970, Carter was elected governor. But so unknown nationally, when he came onto the game show What's My Line, no one knew who he was.
Is this anything to do with the world of fashion?
No.
Yet in 1976, there was a hunger in this country for his plain-spoken promise to be honest with the American people.
My name is Jimmy Carter. I'm from Georgia.
Yes,
I'm going to be the next president.
And this outsider would become the Democratic nominee.
The candidate. And as a president, I'll never tell a lie.
After Richard Nixon's scandals and Gerald Ford's controversial pardon, voters were drawn to this new face with a post-Watergate message. Carter's campaign fueled in part by rock and roll.
I want to introduce to you the great Allman Brothers.
He would later count Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson among his best friends. And it would all help launch a relative unknown to victory.
ABC now projects Carter is the winner with 272 electoral votes.
Wow, look at that.
He said he was surprised the first time he heard the words, President Carter.
It was kind of a shock to me, but I felt ready for it and prepared for it.
And determined to avoid formality, James Earl Carter Jr. would take the oath of office as Jimmy.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And
his wife, Rosalynn, at his side. They married when he was 21, fresh from the Naval Academy. She was 18. And during his improbable journey, Carter's advisors would call Rosalynn his secret weapon.
I look forward to consulting closely with him on a regular basis.
Human rights would drive his foreign policy. He helped forge an historic peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, which still stands today.
I'm so proud of both of you. God bless you both.
Ahead of his time, he was the first president to warn of climate change, installing solar panels on the White House. But the setbacks at home, rising inflation, growing gas lines, would wear on the American people.
Good evening.
Issues he tried to address in what was later dubbed his malaise speech, though he never used that word.
It is a crisis that strikes at the very heart and soul and spirit of our national will.
And Carter would soon face another crisis. After Iranian militants seized American hostages at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the president seemed powerless.
The American hostages were blindfolded, handcuffed, and marched out on the U.S. Embassy's front steps by the revolutionary students.
My thoughts and my prayers for our hostages in Iran are as though they were my own sons and daughters.
An American rescue mission failed. and Carter would lose to Ronald Reagan.
The president, we hear, is preparing his own concession statement. What we may have at the end of all of this is the biggest landslide we've seen in years.
And after 444 days that gripped the country, the Iranians released the American hostages on the same day Jimmy Carter left the White House.
I think that was the happiest day that I've ever had. Not in laying down the burden of the presidency, which I did not want to do, but in just knowing that those hostages were free.
Carter was just 56 when he left the White House, unsure how he would define his future.
We didn't know what we were going to do the rest of our lives, and we decided to take on projects that no one else wanted to do.
But Carter would redefine the modern post-presidency. He worked with Habitat for Humanity. And through the Carter Center, he traveled the world with Rosalind to eradicate disease, monitor elections, and to promote human rights. All work that won the former president the Nobel Peace Prize in 2002.
We can choose to alleviate suffering. We can choose to work together for peace.
He would famously travel commercial,
I love you, Jimmy Carter,
shaking hands with passengers. But no matter how far he traveled, his home was always his farm in Tiny Plains, Georgia. In August of 2015, he revealed skin cancer, melanoma, had spread to his brain.
I've had a wonderful life. I've had thousands of friends, and I've had an exciting and adventurous and gratifying existence. But now I feel, you know, that it's in the hands of God, whom I worship, and I'll be prepared for anything that comes.
But his faith and his strength would carry him through, and crowds would still line up at the tiny Baptist church in Plains, Georgia, for the former president, where he would return to teach Sunday school, just as he had for decades.
Let them know what Christ means to you.
Those lines, a poignant tribute to a president who may be most admired for what he did after he left office.
It's been the best part of my life since I left the White House, but I really have been both gratified and honored and pleased and excited to be the president of a great country.
The Carters had recently marked 77 years of marriage after the former president lost the former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. He was determined at 99 and in hospice to be there to honor his wife. He went to the church in a new suit that had been made for him, wearing a blanket over his lap with the image of his late wife. The two of them were always a team, a shared purpose, a shared kiss. Jimmy Carter often said marrying Rosalynn was the pinnacle of his life, more than any presidency.
Staying with me all this long has been the most wonderful thing in my life.
He's pretty wonderful in my life, too.
ABC's David Muir remembering former President Jimmy Carter. Ann Compton covered the Carter White House for ABC News, and she's with us now. Jimmy Carter came to office at a rather interesting moment in American history. He's got a complicated legacy. How should we be remembering him?
The nation was exhausted by the pain of Vietnam and of Watergate when Jimmy Carter ran for president. And he emerged as kind of a new, rather even a quirky kind of character. He had a cheerful populism. Unfortunately for him, by the time he ran for reelection, the economy had sunk deeper into despair. There were long gas lines. American diplomats were held hostage in what was formerly friendly Iran. So it did not end well for Jimmy Carter.
And yet in the years since, he has become a much, much differently thought of by the American public.
There's no question that the American people denied him a second term, and history has not ranked him as any among the top presidents of the United States. But 22 years after he left the White House, Jimmy Carter was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, that's a pretty good second act. He got it for all of the humanitarian work he did around the globe, and he takes great comfort in that.
What kind of a person was he? We think of him as sort of the Georgian peanut farmer, but he was a bit more colorful than that.
Well, Jimmy Carter, no question, knew his roots. He was from Plains, Georgia, a sleepy part of a southern state. He had been governor. He'd gone to the Naval Academy. He personally was accomplished. But at that time in the South, which was beginning to elect some relatively progressive governors, Jimmy Carter and his family had been rural peanut farmers. Now, that's not your typical background for presidents. His brother, Billy Carter, ran a gas station and marketed rather inexpensive Billy beer. So it was a colorful family, but he always not only stayed true to those Georgia roots, he and Rosalynn retired to Plains and lived there all of their days after the White House.
As much as his roots and his place of birth and, you know, where he was raised informed him, did it ever imperil him as he tried to navigate through Washington, D.C.?
There's no question that when Jimmy Carter came to Washington as really kind of the first post-Watergate president, he brought with him young Georgians, and he populated senior positions with them. And I think eventually that hurt him in relations with establishment Washington, especially with Congress. Congress wasn't afraid of Jimmy Carter, and they didn't necessarily like working with any of his White House chief of staff or the young aides who worked with him. So by not being able to better embrace the Washington establishment, Jimmy Carter's legislative initiatives probably suffered.
And yet, the Camp David Accords being just one example, there were some significant accomplishments.
President Carter had a philosophy about how to approach the world. He thought if you are kind and honest with people, that foreign powers will respond in kind. They did not always, certainly true of Iran. But the president also decided that the Middle East conflict, with its deep religious roots, was very, very important to him. And he went out on a limb trying to bring the Israelis and at least the Egyptians together, making that first peace treaty between the Israeli state and an Arab state. And it was a huge move forward for what had been a generation and actually many generations of discord and conflict.
Ann Compton sharing her memories of covering the Carter White House for ABC News. President Carter released an autobiography some years ago, A Full Life, Reflections at 90. He talked about it with my colleague George Stephanopoulos.
Mr. President, nice to see you again.
It's nice to be back. Thank you.
I love the title of your book, A Full Life.
Well, it has been a full life.
That's about all you can ask for at 90, isn't it?
That's true, yes. And it's been a very diverse life, but enjoyable in almost every case, and exciting, challenging, unpredictable, adventurous.
One of the things I was surprised to read, though, right on the first page of the book, is that it wasn't in any real way a planned life. You
no.
say you ended up in the White House after a series of somewhat peremptory decisions.
I did. When I was a child, until I went off to college, I wanted to be a naval officer and go to the Naval Academy. Nobody else in my father's family had ever finished high school. And to go to college was a big ambition for my parents and me. And there were only two, you know, famous and free universities in America, and that was Annapolis and West Point. My daddy was in the Army, but I had a favorite uncle who was in the Navy, so I wanted to go to Annapolis. So when I was 8 years old, if you'd ask me, what do you want to do when you grow up? Like a parrot, I would say, I want to go to Annapolis and be a naval officer. So that was my first career, and then I got out of the Navy and became a farmer and a businessman for 17 years, and then decided to run for state senate to try to save the public school system, and then went from there to governor and then to president. But each step was independent and not planned ahead of time.
But can you identify any one moment, any one decision that propelled you to the White House?
I think it was my concern originally that I got into politics about the threat to the public school system when the preeminent Democratic candidate would hold up one finger and he'd say, no, not one. If one black child entered a classroom in the South, in Georgia, we'd close the public school system down. I was chairman of the public school system then, the county school board, and I decided I would run for the state senate kind of naively to save this public school system. So the race issue has been a major factor in my life all the way through.
You had that declaration right after you were elected governor. the time to end racial discrimination is over.
That's right. And that was fairly late in the history of civil rights. But it was so remarkable in Georgia in 1971 in January that 2 weeks later I was on the front cover of Time magazine just because I said the time for racial discrimination is over in Georgia.
And you look back to 1971 and think, on the one hand, we've come so far, elected an African-American president, but these problems still so persist.
We kind of took it for granted that we would eliminate the concept in America that whites were superior in some way to black people. And I think we let our guard down, and now the rash of news reports about police mistreatment of black people and the horrible events in Charleston, South Carolina, have kind of brought it to the forefront again. Whether it'll be massive enough to really correct things, I don't know. Maybe it'll just be a transient.
I want to go back to your book and the presidency. You said you were genuinely surprised the first time you heard the words President Carter.
Well, I was. All the way through our campaign, we never referred to the word president. We just said we were running for national office.
We wouldn't even say the word.
No, we didn't say the word. And so, I don't say we never said the word, but we were embarrassed to say, I'm running for president. We just said, I'm running for national office. And then when the priest, I think from Minneapolis, or Minnesota anyway, said, you know, God bless President Jimmy Carter, it was kind of a shock to me. But I felt ready for it and prepared for it.
And those first few days and first years, you tried to get so much done, but you also wrote that last year in the White House, the most stressful.
It was the worst year of my life. We're having the hostages held by Iran and having the Soviet Union invade Afghanistan. But I'd say primarily the hostages, yes.
And you were facing a lot of pressure, even Roslyn.
That's right.
Suggesting that you should go strike when you were holding back.
Most of my advisors, I would say, wanted me to take military action against Iran. But I was against what I wanted to do, and I felt then and still feel that if we had attacked Iran, they would have responded by killing our hostages.
Although you did tell them if they harmed a single hostage.
We told them that a month after they took the hostages, in late November. I sent word to the Ayatollah Khomeini through Germany and through other means that I knew would get to him, that if he injured a hostage, we would close all access by Iran to the outside world. We would block off their ports and not let them take off any airplanes. And if he killed the hostage, we would attack militarily. And I meant what I said, and I think he believed it. So he was very careful never to harm any hostage.
You said you don't know for sure why the Ayatollah held the hostages till after you were out of office. But what does your gut tell you?
I don't want to comment on that.
Because that makes me think you do know.
No, I don't really know. There have been books written about it. Gary Sick wrote a book about it and so forth.
The October Surprise.
I spent 3 days and nights, my last 3 days and nights as president. I never went to bed. I never lay down on the bed. I just stayed up and negotiated. And we had all the hostages in an airplane at the end of the runway in Tehran about 9 o'clock that morning, just waiting to take off. And I kept waiting for them to take off. They didn't. And it was about 5 minutes after I was no longer president that we got the word that the hostages were free. And I'd say that was probably the most happy moment of my life.
Of your life?
Yes, I think it was. Maybe except marrying Rosalind, but yes.
Jimmy Carter with ABC's George Stephanopoulos. Even though Jimmy Carter served only one term as president, he never stopped serving his country. He remained on the world stage wherever he thought he could make a difference. More from ABC's Juju Chang.
Former President Jimmy Carter played statesman and peacemaker around the world. Whether it was a battle over a ballot box, calming nuclear saber-rattling, or facing down warring enemies. After the U.S. invaded Panama, the former president in 1989 led the first election observation mission to Panama.
How many people on the voter list for this match?
Taking on dictators like Manuel Noriega for stealing free elections from the people.
It was obvious from all of our observations and the subsequent analyses that the people voted about 3-1 in favor of ending the dictatorship and for the opposition parties.
His mission through the Carter Center in Atlanta helped the organization become a leader in election observation.
Do you have the voter ID cards here?
Yeah.
You have those.
Monitoring more than 100 elections in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. Carter documented his efforts in Indonesia in his 2007 memoir, Beyond the White House.
The people of Indonesia are providing a dramatic example of peaceful political change and firmly negating the claim that Muslim societies are averse to democratic governments. This is a good message for the world to absorb.
He also played a key role in brokering peace talks in the former Yugoslavia between the warring factions of Bosnia, Serbia, and Croatia in 1994, which eventually led to the Dayton Peace Accords. That same year, another diplomatic success. The former president helped the U.S. government settle a tension-filled nuclear weapons dispute with North Korea, meeting with then-North Korean President Kim Il-sung. The result? The first official talks between the two countries in 40 years and an agreed framework on nuclear weapons.
And I'd like to inform you that they have stopped the sanctions activity in the United Nations.
More than a decade later, Citizen Carter was back in Pyongyang on a private humanitarian mission, winning the release of an American teacher facing 8 years in prison for allegedly crossing into North Korea. In 2002, Carter became the first U.S. president, former or current, to visit Cuba since Calvin Coolidge traveled there in 1928.
Por el señor presidente Castro, para que yo visite a Cuba.
And he showed no signs of letting up, another mark of his legacy, traveling all over the world with Rosalind by his side to eradicate disease.
To all the children, that they will have this terrible disease in their bodies reduced dramatically. May God go with all of you and be a blessing on everyone in this country. Thank you very much.
His work through the Carter Center becoming the motto for his legacy, waging peace, fighting disease, and building hope. Pioneering a model of post-presidential activism that few can match.
Well, my dreams of the future of the world are based on my religious and political philosophies and faith. I worship the Prince of Peace, and to enhance the prospects of peace and to remove the blight of war and the threat of war would be the overwhelming dream that I would have.
ABC's Juju Chang. Mark Updegrove, the author and presidential historian, knew Jimmy Carter well, and he joins us now. Mark, tell us how we should remember the late president. It really seemed he came to define what an ex-president can be.
I think that's right. Jimmy Carter always considered it a backhanded compliment to be considered the best former president we have ever had. But he also redefined that job. Jimmy Carter became in his post-presidency what he wanted to be in his presidency, the person who was out there trying to wage peace and health throughout the world. And he continued to pursue those things after having lost the presidency to Ronald Reagan in 1980.
He may not have liked the title of our favorite former president, but certainly Americans were kinder to him in retirement than the electorate was in 1980.
And interestingly, yes, but interestingly, Jimmy Carter considered his post-presidential years his most important contribution as a public servant. The things that he did under the auspices of the Carter Center, which included the eradication of little-known but pervasive third-world diseases like guinea worm disease and river blindness, and also the work that he did for Habitat for Humanity, banging nails to put up houses for the underclass. These were remarkable contributions, and we never saw any former president do things like that in his hands-on way as Jimmy Carter.
Did he carry a grudge from his primary challenge from Ted Kennedy?
I think that there was a little bit of resentment there on the part of Jimmy Carter when Ted Kennedy challenged him for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1980. I think that Jimmy Carter felt there was a certain sense of entitlement by Ted Kennedy in doing that, and he didn't think he was a good citizen of the Democratic Party for jeopardizing his own candidacy.
And what about his presidency as we now reassess it posthumously? Is it better? Was it better than perhaps he was given credit for at the time?
I think that there are certain contributions that he made during the course of his presidency that certainly hold up. If you look at the remarkable peace agreement that he negotiated between Israel and Egypt, which stands today, that is an astounding foreign policy contribution. Who knew that we could repair the divide between those two countries and come up with an agreement, again, that has stood the test of time? I think that there were certainly failures of the Carter administration that weigh down his presidency. I think historians will certainly see it that way, including the way that the Iran hostage crisis was handled, as for nearly 2 years we had 52 American hostages taken by Iran in Tehran. That was an interminable period by as far as Americans were concerned. And it came at a time when our faith in ourselves as a people was ebbing. And I'm not sure Jimmy Carter helped to boost our spirits during that time that we now call a time of malaise.
People didn't take too kindly to hearing that from their president.
He made a speech in which he took the American people to task for being in the dumps and tried to build their spirit. And it was called later the malaise speech by the press. And but interestingly enough, Jimmy Carter never uttered that word during the speech, but it did sort of characterize the mood in the country at the time.
How else should we remember him, Mark?
Well, I think he was a remarkable humanitarian, and not only was our 39th president, but was a Nobel Peace Prize recipient. Carter left the White House in 1981, not knowing what he would do with the rest of his life. He just served one term, fully expected to serve two, left the White House with an unfinished agenda, and 21 years later was a Nobel Peace Prize recipient. That is remarkable. When you consider this incredible man's life. So I think he would want to be remembered for his contributions both in the White House and out of the White House, for the contributions, indelible as they were, in peace and human rights.
The presidential historian Mark Updegrove remembering Jimmy Carter, who has died. As we've been remembering, Jimmy Carter kept making a big impact even after leaving the Oval Office. A lot of that centered on his work for Habitat for Humanity. My colleague Byron Pitsnell.
It was 1984, not long after the once most powerful man in the world put down his pen to pick up a hammer. Only 56 when he left office, joining Habitat for Humanity, building homes for those in need.
All I'm running for is to get this apartment finished. I'm not going to get back involved in politics at all.
Wife Rosalyn by his side every step of the way.
He's worked probably an hour more than I have ever worked.
The couple first crisscrossing America, and later expanding their mission overseas.
We're already working in Guatemala, Peru, Haiti, Bolivia, Zaire, Zambia, Uganda, Kenya, India, as well as 50 other places in the United States.
Meeting some of the world's most vulnerable, determined to make a difference, one wall, one roof, one home at a time.
One thing that Habitat does better than any organization I know, it lets you connect with people who are different from you in a very, humbling way, but also very gratifying and enjoyable way.
Even after he took a bad fall at home in 2019, the bruised and bandaged former president was back on the job a day later in Nashville, Tennessee, never missing a beat.
Had to go to the hospital, and they took 14 stitches in my forehead, and my eye is black, as you notice. But I had a number one priority, and that was to come to Nashville to build houses.
For nearly four decades, the Carters, joining 100,000 volunteers to build, renovate, and repair more than 4,300 homes in 14 countries.
Everybody believes in human rights. And I think one of the fundamental human rights, perhaps more important to very poor people than anyone, is to have a decent place to live.
Their work, helping Habitat for Humanity become internationally recognized for building decent and affordable housing, and inspiring the next generation of movers, shakers, and builders.
These Habitat projects have also been a deep emotional experience, not only for us and all the other thousands of volunteers who go with us, but especially to the families who've had their lives transformed.
Our thanks to ABC's Byron Pitts.
I'm Aaron Katursky. We leave you now with the late president in his own words.
I've wanted to serve as president because I love this country and because I love the people of this nation.
America did not invent human rights. In a very real sense, it's the other way around. Human rights invented America.
We must adjust to changing times and still hold to unchanging principles.
From the bottom of my heart, I want to express to you the gratitude I feel. Thank you, fellow citizens, and farewell.
ABC News, honored for the second year in a row with 5 Murrow Awards for Excellence in Audio, including breaking news coverage. ABC News, America's number one choice.